Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Lara.
Morena.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. I just saw there's I recommend a news article for everyone that's on the Herald. The top ten hot cross buns.
Oh.
I've been reading that. It's been a good start to the day. No war, no people suffering, but hot cross buns.
You know what? I've been eating the ones from New World recently. Pretty good. Not sponsored.
Are you guys a fan of the Daily Bread hot cross buns? I feel like they seem to get the most hype.
They're yummy, but I don't know. They're just, everything's so expensive these days.
So true.
I'm about to branch out, but that was a great segue.
I did just bring the hot cross buns back to the cost of living crisis. Thank you very much.
It all comes down to that. Okay, the polls. It's pretty, I'm looking at the spreadsheet, the graph on...
it's not looking good.
On RNZ. And isn't it just like... tragic to watch both Labour and National just on a pretty parallel, steady downward stream?
Oh yeah, and look, I think it's one of those things I've been reflecting on, because I do hang out with a lot of left-wing people, and it's just part of being an academic, you know, who kind of lives in Mount Eden and like goes to Wellington a lot and works at Victoria University. You know, there's a lot of left-wingers around me at any given moment, and so you start to wonder if you're in some kind of bubble where people are kind of talking bad things about Luxon, and actually, you know, this is just one poll, and maybe, you know, the rest of the country, middle New Zealand, whoever they are, suddenly it will pick up. But it doesn't really seem to be the case. It doesn't really seem to be, you know, like, it does seem like that initial instinct of, oh, okay, the polls are on a downward trend is right. We've had a second poll. I mean, there'll be more polls. There's still a long time to go to election. But it does, again, look like, you know, Luxon and National started the term. You know, they did really well to win that last election. They started the term, and then we've seen this consistent downward trend and quite an unprecedented sort of downward trend as well. I can't think of sort of such a downward trend in MMP history in the polls. So they've kind of started off, they've gone down, and now we've got, you know, the potential for that single-term national government, and I think that's, yeah, something that we've all been talking about for quite some time, but it's looking more and more like a potential reality. But as you point out, Labour aren't exactly distinguishing themselves right now or doing what people would call being a government in waiting, you know, a government ready to just, like, have the voter pick them off the shelf and they're ready to go. It's not looking good for them either.
Yeah, I mean, Labour's definitely in the lead, and it feels... It's interesting because I mean, when is this poll counted from? Like, does this include the most recent Chris Hipkins scandal?
Probably only just. Hard to tell with the week-to-week thing. Normally they poll them about a week out from when they release them, 1 to 2 weeks out from when they release them. So it probably does include those numbers. Yeah, but see, we don't necessarily think that those sorts of scandals, where that seems to have burnt out and it's not really gone much further, that would affect things that much, you know? Like, it was a fairly self-contained scandal, as scandals go, so...
And Luxon's popularity is particularly bad, but it seems as though we don't really have an idea of any sort of predecessor.
Yeah, so there's this idea that's been going around again of, like, okay, so if not Luxon, then who? That starts to get a bit more desperate if you start to consider the fact that that National tend to win a lot of electorates, and so, you know, the party vote only entitles you to as many electorates as your party vote entitles you to, and the party list is topped up on top of those electorates. So if National don't do well in the party vote, but they still win all their electorates, you start to see these high-ranking list MPs out, and that includes Chris Bishop and Nicola Willis. So there's a point at which they have to kind of come together and go, okay, one of us has got to take this for the team and have a go at it. And, you know, we see both Chris Bishop and Nicola Willis as fairly consistent media performers. Nicola Willis has been out there and was a hard hat and safety vest the other day. You know, it kind of feels like they're running in a way, right, as the potential backup for that. Other people like Erica Stanford might not have the name recognition or like visibility, but again, is sitting there as another potential successor, someone that you could kind of what they call glass cliff, chuck a woman in when everything's failing. Like, it's similar to what happened to Jacinda Ardern in 2017. So there's always those possibilities. But we'll see in the next, I think it is really the next couple of polls.
Mm.
Yeah. And of course, the other big factor here is voter turnout. So after the last bad poll, Luxon kind of said that, you know, there was this Australian firm that was doing their internal polling. And what it seems that that Australian firm was doing some kind of math differently or weighting differently, where you kind of adjust the poll to adjust for voter turnout. And now we know that National have put in place these laws, that's probably going to disenfranchise about 400,000 voters, many of them left-wing voters. So, of course, it might not be as bad as it looks on the surface, eh?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, really, really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about Winston Peters, because he's given this State of the Nation speech, and he's suggesting that we should do a bit of an overhaul of the energy sector.
Yeah, so for New Zealand First, like, aligned with their sort of ideology, is trying to put New Zealand first, like, literally it's in the name. And so part of that is these sort of appeals to nationalism or sovereignty across a lot of different fields, right? Mm. And one of them is around energy and around power. We always see them talking about, you know, importing, you know, making sure that we have enough fuel and so on and so forth. They've been talking about that for a long time. But in terms of the actual electricity sector, they've come forward and they had a State of the Nation speech, which feels late. I feel like the State of the Nation speeches were a couple of months ago, but sure, whatever. I'm still doing a State of the Nation speech.
It's hard to keep up with multiple. The trends when you're so freaking old.
Like, did he do multiple State of the Nation speeches? Yeah, maybe it's the delay. I don't know what's happening here, but... It was actually one where really New Zealand First policy was saying that, you know, the electricity companies generate the electricity, that they should then not be retailing. So they call them the gen-tailers, like the generators retailing the electricity. And that if we had a separation of electricity generation and retail, that would add competition in the market and it would make it less monopoly style, you know, less duopoly, whatever style.
Mm.
So that's the kind of idea behind that policy, to break them up. Because that might help prices. So that's I think, really their main kind of take-home, which, you know, does actually... I've seen people across the political spectrum argue for that in the past, so that's widely aligned with a lot of people that are experts and interested in that area. So, yeah, sure. The policy.
Yeah, it's sort of like... doesn't, on the surface, sound like a bad idea and could become... like, do you reckon this could become a bipartisan sort of issue or discussion?
Yeah. Yeah, potentially, but see, this is the other thing. We have to remember the other big target of sort of populism and the, you know, the common folk on the street versus the elites has also been the supermarkets, but nothing's happened there either. So it's one of those things where it's like you've got these large companies. They have some pretty good funds there for lobbying and pretty good funds there to get into the policy process, pretty good funds there to talk down a minister. Pretty good funds there for public relations and a strategy to make things go away.
Mm.
And it's actually really hard to try to break those up because of those sorts of factors. And also we have this, like, bias towards just doing what we've always done before in Western politics. So, yeah, it does seem like a sensible solution or direction, but, again, I'm quite sceptical as to what would actually happen when they got into government with this policy. Yeah.
Just quickly before we go, shall we touch a little bit on the fuel crisis and the fuel support package that is starting to be rolled out by the government? And we've had a boost in funding for increasing the amount of public EV charges. What else are we sort of seeing roll out from the government in terms of support?
Yeah, so we basically at the post-cabinet press conference yesterday, they said that there's going to be some announcement today. So we're waiting to see today what they announce. It looks like there will be some kind of financial, like, one-off payment or something along those lines, or some kind of maybe time-bound regular payment to people who are earning about $70,000 a year or less, so using something like the Independent Earner Tax Credit to distribute funds through that good IRD IT system, which seems to work quite well for these purposes. They've been saying that, you know, they've learned the lessons of COVID and so on and so forth, that it has to, you know, not be inflationary, and that seems to be, like, their best attempt at that. I'd like to give a shout out to the Greens today, though, because the Greens You know, we talk about Labor not providing and sort of government in waiting, but the Greens really came out of the gates running on Monday with the sort of policy around, you know, targeted assistance, stopping the cuts to the services that disabled people use to get around, you know, free public transport, a windfall tax on record profits and so on and so forth. So the Greens came out with quite a lot of these policies already. So that was, and said, hey, National, you can come with us and vote for these and we can get it over the line. We've got the numbers. So, yeah, the Greens this week seem to, you know, if we've got a winner of the week, it seems to be them because that really was well packaged and put together.
Mm.
But for National, we're just kind of waiting and seeing with this one. It does seem like there's not an urgency and, yeah, not, like, it's kind of like a, some people might get a little bit of money, but it's probably not going to be enough is the vibe at the moment.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, doesn't, you know, subsidising public transport, making it free or considerably cheaper, isn't that sort of the most obvious option?
Sure is. That's all I can say. That just seems really logical. And you know what? The other thing I've been thinking about and reading this week is there's this great science communication researcher, Jess Berenson-Shaw, and she's actually got a newsletter. She's got it started up a consultancy again. She used to be at the workshop, and she's been doing this for years. And she's been talking about the crisis framing and talking about how, like, we can start to think about this as actually a quite long-term issue going back many decades, you know, with this history and just, like, fossil fuels and vested interests and bits and pieces here and, you know, this lack of public transport investment in New Zealand and all these bits and pieces. And actually thinking about how we can long-term make public transport accessible, easy, just easy to go on, like, free, yeah, very low cost, is actually what we should have been doing these last 30 years but haven't been. So, yeah, it shouldn't necessarily take a crisis to do that, but, apparently public transport is up 7% already, and I imagine that it will continue to increase.
Yeah, and it's also, it's aside from that, it's the accessibility, you know. Like, if you needed to catch a bus at kind of 4:30 in the morning, there's not always services available, things like that. The trains are down here in Auckland for, you know, weekends, Easter, everything. So, yeah, I feel like people are well within their rights to feel fairly disillusioned by whatever's heading for us today.
Yeah, and it's a thing of, like, this continued kind of, like, crisis, everyone's tired, it's all negative, this kind of stuff, eh? Like, I totally feel that, and I'm totally in that all the time. But, yeah, recently a few sensible people have said, hey, they want us to feel that way. And I'm like, okay, then, I'll be hopeful. But, it is quite hard, eh, to be hopeful in all of this when it's like, you know, like, actually thinking about having to, whether you can buy hot cross buns or whatever.
Yes.
That's actually like a financial decision nowadays, whereas, like, yeah, it wouldn't have been 20 years ago, so.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, off we go out into the world again to hunt down our hot cross buns, where the cost of driving to the hot cross buns will be more expensive than the hot cross buns.
So we're going to try and get illusioned this week instead of disillusioned.
Everybody
Just
think of hot cross buns. Close your eyes, go to your happy place, eat a hot cross bun, everything will be okay.
Yeah. There are policy solutions to things, right? Like, there are. It's just a shame that we don't have great public transport like most other places.
Yes.
Oh, well.
Well, thank you so much, Lara. We're going to remain hopeful and catch up with you soon.
And get hot cross buns.
And get hot cross buns.
Yeah, I think it's on the cards.
Thanks, Lara. Have a good one.
Kakite.
Bye. You just heard a bit of political commentary.